All right. I'm one of those spiritual students that likes to hang around pool balls. Pool halls. Not pool halls, the baseball player, but pool halls. And you learn a lot about destiny in pool halls. So if you suppose that you have a table, and most of the balls are on the table, and you're trying to sink one, and you line up the cue ball with the ball that you want to strike, and you drive the cue ball into it. When it strikes the desired ball, both balls go off at different angles. And they strike other balls, or they strike the cushions, and the process is continued with all of the balls until the momentum has been spent. This is simple causality. It is used to talk a lot about cause and effect, but it also works with cause and consequence. Now, it isn't directly like cause and consequence in one way, because the balls are not sentient. However, the consciousness of the person with the cue in hand is sentient. But nonetheless, we can still learn a lot from this. For instance, when the cue ball strikes the first ball, that is an event that differentiates a cause from a consequence. The path of the first ball struck is a consequence of the causal agency. The causal agency of the cue ball, and ultimately of the person with the cue in hand that started the whole thing going. Even the cue ball itself, after the first impact, its path is also a consequence of that same causal agency. But it hasn't spent all of its causal ability because it goes on to strike other balls. All future impacts cause changes that we call consequences. And this goes on until there's no more energy left and the whole system has been spent. Now, if we think about this, there's very little difference between cause and consequence in this set of causal events. Kinetic energy is the same, whether the cue ball is being primarily causal or whether it is consequential of the first impact. Only things that have really changed are the positions in time and space and the consciousness of the pool player. It's always like that with energy. Energy is neutral. It can be used good or for evil. And in some ways, it's always like that with consciousness. Consciousness is conscious whether it is something pleasant or unpleasant that we are experiencing. Now we have an idea of what an apple will taste like before we bite into it, but we don't really know what this apple will be like until we bite into it. Specific events like that produce specific change or changes in consciousness. General causes and general consequences and collective destiny involving many causal agents open up a whole new set of issues. Things get very complex. Don't have time to go into mass destiny, but it's a very engaging subject. Consequences issuing from even simple things, as anyone who's played pool knows, there really is ultimately no slop. And even if you don't have skill and you hold your consciousness that you're going to win, some of those freaky things happen and balls start dropping. So So that pool is very much a game of consciousness, and we influence it in ways that we don't realize that we're influencing it. Now, in the astrology talk yesterday, the talk preceding this, we spoke about the destiny of action, like the action of the cue ball and the action of the player who chooses to initiate the whole business. In this talk, we're going to talk about the destiny of changes, the changes that occur across cause and consequence. In this case, the principle of cause and consequence would be called the principle of transference, or the principle of changeability, where either consciousness or energy or something like that is transferred across a cause-effect or a cause-consequence relationship. So instead of talking about cardinal sign destiny, we're going to be talking about common sign or immutable destiny. We're going to speak about the attitude and the significance of this kind of destiny. We're not going to talk much about the events. We're not going to say that there are no events in common sign destiny or immutable sign destiny, for surely there are. But we're going to talk about what's valuable, and that is the understanding consciousness in terms of events. We're not going to say that events or actions are unimportant, because they are important. It's just that the events in themselves, they may be essential to making changes, but the understanding of the changes and the options of what can be done in the transfer of energy is what is important with common signs. We're going to try to say that knowledge and consciousness in the interplay between cause and consequence is what is significant and what is important. And with all specialized kinds of talks, we're going to state things in a very strong way, and then you'll have to sink into the background and the actual importance or relative significance that they have in the whole gestalt of things is, you'll have to map that out or bring that out in your consciousness. Now, when a pool player lines up a shot, he thinks about the direction, about the spin, and how hard he's going to have to stroke. He also, if he's a good pool player, thinks about what the table is going to look like after the shot. And if he is a really good pool player, he's aware of the more human aspects and not just the skill in the kinetic energy. He thinks about the strengths and weaknesses of his opponent. What kind of a table he can leave his opponent that makes it hard because that opponent has a weakness for certain kinds of shots. He might even think about the psychology of the opponent. I have a friend that for many years was a professional pool player. He traveled around the country with a small suitcase and his cue stick. And he played where there were thousands of dollars being bet on the side, and people would shout at you shots because that was all part of the game. Quite an interesting life he had, and that's part of the psychology of the game. You have to be able to perform in almost any kind of circumstance. After the shot has been made, and it doesn't take very long, he looks back to see how good his judgment was and how good his execution was, and where he correctly or incorrectly did things and what he omitted. So there's a good deal that goes into the game of pool that is not just bashing one ball against another. There's a lot more than the seemingly simple events. We waited about half an hour or so. The moment one pool ball strikes another is in a way like any other moment. And it divides history and knowledge from the past and the potential of the future. That's what we want to think about. The consciousness before and after that moment of impact is the same consciousness in many ways, but in some ways it's quite different. And what we're going to say now is a bit complicated, and I'm not sure that I can get it across with real clarity and simplicity. The consciousness on both sides of the moment is also different. The player knows what he knows, and that is limited by the self-consciousness developed from experience. Because if there wasn't the limit of time, of the moment, he would know what the future will be like. Now, some pool players have so much experience that their consciousness stretches into the future. And the more awake they are, the more self-conscious they are, and the more skilled they are, they can tell you what the future of the balls on the table is going to look like. That is an objective state. When you know what things are, that is objective awareness. Before the shot, everything on the other side of the moment, the future side of the moment, is potential. And even with a very good pool player, it is only slightly known at best. A pool player can't tell you where every ball is going to end up. He can tell you where a few are going to be, but he can't tell you where everyone is. So most of the future is subjective to the pool player. Now, if the pool player is really keen and observant, and he looks back, and he can see that not all of the subjectivity was in the future, because some of it was in himself in the past before that moment of impact. We sometimes don't realize our blind spots and our weaknesses and the things that we're capable of and incapable of because we have a subjective blindness. We find this a lot in card games or chess games or things like that. A kibitzer who's walking around the table can see things that the players can't see because the players are to some extent blinded by personal subjectivity. So we can see that there is subjectivity that expands across the moment, but it's two different kinds of subjectivity. The subjectivity of the future is just because we don't know it, because we're not aware of all of the factors that are coming to play to produce the future. There's subjectivity a little bit in the past because there are things about ourselves that we don't know. And if we were completely self-conscious, that subjectivity would disappear. So we can see that kind of subjectivity. Similarly, in the future, there are things that must be. And they must be because of the laws of physics, of kinetics, of momentum, and spin and things like that. So we can see that the past is primarily objective. It's history. It's factual. It may still need interpretation, but it is objective. You can't say that something didn't happen if it happened. But there is some subjectivity in the past because we don't, you know, we're aware of what we've done before and what's happened to us before, and we're aware of ourselves right now, but we realize there's some things that, because of our personal attitude, you know, we have our own little selfish way of looking at things, that things are subjective. The future is primarily subjective. We don't know what it's going to be yet. When the past becomes the future, or the future works its way into the past, it is a change from what is primarily subjective to what is objective. Eventually, again, with greater self-consciousness, we will know more of the future. Our consciousness in the moment will expand in both directions so that we are aware of ourselves in the present and how that extends into the future and into the past. I don't think it's possible, and hopefully it isn't possible, to be completely objectively aware, because that doesn't leave room for creativity. But at least the things that we are unaware of are not just subjective ignorances and biases and things like that. The things that we are not aware of are creative potentials, because we can make and do new things. Now, what we have just described, the change of consciousness when the objective past is extended into the future through an event, and that event can be an entire lifetime, or when the subjectivity of the future is taken into the past, that whole process is a bidirectional, double-bodied understanding of the nature of events in time. And with that, we have, in a vague way, also described the attitudes of the double-bodied signs, the mutable signs, or the common signs. We're talking about the signs of theoreticians who have the ideas or who have the data, and they can understand trends, and they can see what kinds of options are available for a person into the future. And there is a lot of consciousness that is put into how things are accomplished. And that is what is more important to the common signs. It is how things are done, what things we can do, what we can get out of it. All of those things are common sign consciousness. In Trinity, we have fixed signs, which are associated with the first attribute of Trinity, and we have cardinal signs, which are associated with the third attribute of Trinity. But the second attribute, the love wisdom, is associated with the common signs. So by their projection, they represent understanding and knowledge and a transfer or change of consciousness. The love-wisdom attribute of the threefold spirit is reflectively projected into the ethers. And the ethers have that strange nature that they're bipolar. One pole is in the inner spiritual worlds, where the inner side of things is what is important, and the other pole is in the outer manifest material world that we see around us. And so they have a foot in both the external, completely external world and the primarily internal world. And so we can see that the common signs relate to that inner-outer kind of consciousness, as well as past and future consciousness, or the spanning of consciousness across two states wherein there is a change of consciousness. This is what the common signs are all about. The first two common or mutable signs are ruled by Mercury. And Mercury is the planetary personification of the concrete mind. Hence, Gemini and Virgo are fields of mental attitudes. They're signs of knowledge, signs of perusing knowledge for or sensory experience of knowledge or organization of knowledge. It's amazing how much mileage a Virgo, for example, can get out of a few simple bits of data, a few simple facts, how they relate and how they can be organized and all of that. It's just, you know, it's an amazing thing. So common sign destiny is knowledge destiny. Knowledge that comes from spanning cause and consequence, or spanning the events of the past and what we could do with them in the future. You can see why we're saying that if a person has cardinal sign destiny and they can't fulfill all of it, in the next life they can see many, many ways that they can fulfill it without just simple blatant action. This is important to have the service consciousness that you find in the common signs. Now the last two of the common immutable signs are co-ruled by Jupiter. And Jupiter is the planetary personification of the abstract mind, or the ideational mind, or the higher mind, whatever you want to call it. So Sagittarius and Pisces are signs of much higher understanding. Not as high as direct intuitions that come from Uranus and Neptune, wherein you know the truth immediately and directly because they are expressions, direct expressions of the truth, but high enough so that you can get the general purpose, the idea, or what, you know, the theoretical view of what is happening in cause and consequence. The concrete mind, which is ruled by Mercury, stands between, on one hand, the transcendental, or what are called the noumenal worlds, and on the other hand, the phenomenal or concrete world. For this reason, Mercury was called the servant of the gods. It served everything from the transcendental realms by bringing it into concretion for finalization, for execution, all of those things. And it also serves humans because it takes sensory data, it takes events and all of the effects of events, and it organizes them, absorbs them, and assimilates them into the spirit through the abstract mind. So this again gives you another understanding, the understanding between thought and idea, or between event and the general principle behind that event, of which that event is an expression. And so the whole idea of the common signs straddles between concrete and abstract. And so we again have that double or dual purpose side of things. Mercury is neutral. The mind is neutral. It has to be neutral in order to carry out the things of the gods. It's like a lens. The lens is colored or tinted or fogged or veiled is the word that the crystallographers use. If a crystal is veiled, it doesn't work well as a lens. And so the more neutral, clear, and pure the mind can be, the better it is. So we find all of the signs, especially common signs, especially the mercurial common signs, Gemini and Virgo, have this great striving to be neutral, to be clear about things. Jupiter, on the other hand, is positive. It can be turned to be bigoted or prejudiced, but for the most part, it has positivity and confidence in divinity. Even if the person doesn't have the full experience of divinity, there is enough faith or enough of having the idea, because you're relaxed and you can see the whole big picture. It's kind of easy to be positive then. Sometimes you can even be lulled away by that kind of consciousness. So another thing about the Jupiterian consciousness, in the same way that the mercurial consciousness has to be clear and neutral to transmit things, the Jupiterian consciousness has to be all-inclusive. The planets that represent the phenomenal things, like Saturn, has a certain specific range of consciousness that is in it. And Mercury is completely thoughtful, and Venus is completely loving. But all of these things come out of universals. And the universal of universals, which is represented by Jupiter, incorporates within itself the seeds of thought as well as the seeds of emotion or the seeds of action. Out of an idea, you can have thoughts and feelings and all kinds of manifestations. So there is another way that we can see the common signs is this inclusionary way of looking at things. It includes all of the possible things, especially so in the abstract consciousness that is indicated by Jupiter. Sometimes it's too inclusive, but that's another problem. Each of the astrological attributes, cardinal, fixed, and common, has in itself members of all four elements. So we can think of having cardinal fire, which is the way again, it's the very simplest way that we think of energy, and that's Aries. Or we can have the energy of water, as in Cancer, as we see in the tides or in a running brook or something like that. Or we have the simple energy of air moving. In a very similar way, the mutable signs also have all four elements. And so there is an understanding of the air that blows and listeth where it may in Gemini, so that the understanding is so subtle that it's invisible the way air is invisible, and that kind of understanding can see things from both points of view. In our body, the air is bipolar. When we breathe in, it's oxygenated, and when we breathe out, it's carbonated. And so that Gemini consciousness sees things from two points of view. We can't sing on the in-breath, or we can't sing with ease, but on the out-breath, when things are pouring out, that's a different kind of consciousness. So there's a creative consciousness without breathing, and within breathing, there is an impression of the external world, both from the breath record and from the kind of consciousness that we have when we take things in and take them all the way back to the spirit. So again, we see another side of the mutable signs, where for each of the four elements, we can see a commonality. We don't really have time to go into all of that, but it's a nice exercise if you want to sit down for an afternoon with a blank sheet of paper and a pencil and try to understand the common consciousness that is found in all four elements by looking at the four common signs. Now, common signs are not without action. But common signs understand the intent, the reason, the purpose. And in that, they can have the action occur a different way. If you know what you have to accomplish and the purpose for it, you can set out and you can find a way that is convenient or that fits your own talents. This is why common sign destiny is a way that you can make it up to other people in a vicarious way. Gemini rules reading. You can learn things by reading without having to learn them by hard experience. If you read a biography of someone similar to yourself, you learn from what they learned in their life, and you know, say, aha, this is what's happening in my life. I'm not going to let that happen. And that's the idea that we're trying to get to in looking at common sign destiny, vicarious destiny, service destiny. Now, when we finished looking at horoscopes yesterday, He's finished by looking at the horoscope of Donald Harvey, the man that claimed to have killed 87 different people, mostly by poison, but by suffocating and other things also. He called himself the Angel of Death and the Angel of Mercy. And obviously, he couldn't continue to pay back that cardinal sign destiny to those 87 people because they weren't around anymore. And so what happens in a situation like that is a person does get a chance to make it up, and they can understand how the same essence can be brought to the people that he owes it to in other ways. And this is why a person is often in such a circumstance born into common signs. It's not like, you know, destiny just is itself. But within that, there is, what I'm trying to say, that in the process of effecting causes, if you have started an action, if you can go ahead in your mind or in your spirit and you can see where things are going, you can correct. And the corrective destiny are the, compensatory destiny is what is indicated by Gemini. So what Max Heindel said when he talked about these three stages of destiny was very, very insightful. It talks about the way the universe works, and it talks about things that people can learn through their lives. So what we're going to do now is we're going to start looking at horoscopes of people who are very common sign in their nature, and we're going to try to see how that works into their life, what kind of service they're offering to the world, how they function vicariously, and how they can change things or make corrections to things on the fly. Because if there's anything that the common signs are, it's fast. You know, being a very plodding Scorpio and even having Uranus, which is usually an instantaneous planet, I have that in Taurus, and even that plods. And I have great admiration for those people that are so facile, so glib, and so, you know, have that ability to just dash things out there really quickly. Now, we're going to see in some of these horoscopes that what happens when you go into the spiritual worlds, each world that you go deeper into the spirit, the more reality it has, the more authenticity it has. It's more filled with purpose. It's more filled with the light of the consciousness of the divine. And so when we have people that are focused more on the means and they have that rapid consciousness, there's often a tendency to think that this is enough alone. I don't have to hike all the way around this mountain. There are videos that I can get and I can see what it's like. And so very often there is a tendency to not be so directly experiential. And since time doesn't matter so much in the world of thought the way it does here, if you're playing a piece of music, you have to hit the key at exactly the right time. But if you're in a world where things are sped up so fast that it's like stopped action, when that occurs and there's that stopped action, well, tomorrow's as good as today. So there is a tendency to be dilatory. There's a tendency to put things off, and there's a tendency to excuse, because an excuse thought is just as easy as an understanding thought. And so that's what we face when we look at the common signs. Obviously, just to show that there are problems with each of them, common signs have this ability to make things up and to handle something vicariously, but there's also a tendency to say, you know, tomorrow's good enough time to do it. All right. You ready to look at horoscopes? So, these are the horoscopes for today. Very few horoscopes today. Just listen. All right, the first horoscope should be the horoscope of Alexander Graham Bell. I had a great illusion cleared away when I started studying this horoscope. I was of the opinion that Alexander Graham Bell was deaf, but in fact, he was not deaf. He had a turnabout. His wife was deaf, and his mother was deaf. If that isn't the reversal of circumstances in consciousness, I don't know what is. It's an excellent example of what we've just been talking about. The 12th house is the hangover house. It's destiny that hangs over from the immediate past. It's things that are ripe being overripe. The things that we just did, but shouldn't have, but now must suffer. So the 12th house opportunities offer the 12th house offers us opportunities to solve universal problems. So that we see it in the large sense. The 12th house, for example, tries to solve medical problems in hospitals where there can be a concentration of all kinds of equipment and things like that that we couldn't, like if you lived out on the prairie, that you couldn't do. It's the 12th house is also the mental institution. 12th house is the monastery where people solve universal spiritual problems for other people who don't have the time to sit down and ponder them and understand them. It used to be that society really valued monasteries, because they knew it was important that there were people that were holding prayers for everyone, or people who were solving ideas of the mind, so that because other people had to be busy feeding themselves or building things or doing things of that nature. So often the 12th house is a house of limitation. Like in a prison, a person is a prisoner is deprived of social rights, and the intent of corrective institutions is that it is like a gigantic timeout. The little kid has to sit in the corner and can't interact with the other kids, and in that he knows what he's missing. That's what the basic idea of it is. Unfortunately, the way things are now, they are meant to be penalties. You know, a lot of people say they shouldn't be let to get away with things. And we want to put them in jail. We want to keep them away. We want to keep them out of sight. And we want to punish them for what they did. They have a debt to society, is the attitude that they have, and that's penal. And that is counter-effective. People know when there's a social vengeance against them, and the more the social vengeance is put on them, the more the pressure cooker effect is brought in so that they rebel even more strongly. If it were indeed a time out and there were corrective things, it would be a much healthier situation. In this case, the social deprivation is brought about through deafness. Probably the two women that he loved the most in his life, his mother and his wife, he couldn't communicate with so that they could understand his tone of voice. So we can see in this horoscope some very classic things. There are how many? There are 3, 4, 5 planets. Half the planets are in common signs, and common signs are on the angle. Now this is a classic in another way, because the watery signs and the houses that correspond to the watery signs, the 4th, the 8th, and the 12th, are called mute signs, because Mercury, when it is in them, indicates deafness. 4th, 8th, and 12th. Yes, the houses that relate to the watery signs are sometimes called the watery signs, and the houses that relate to the watery signs are called mute signs or houses, because when Mercury is in them, there's a tendency to be deaf, and as a result of deafness, muteness. And the reason for that is, there are several reasons for a person being deaf or being around deaf, deafness, is Mercury is what does the perception, and Mercury is what does the thinking. But when it's in a watery sign or in opportunities that are like water, it gets excited. And when it gets excited, it cannot think well, and it cannot perceive well. So one of the most common causes for deafness is allowing your emotional nature to overcome your mentality and being so excited that you can't bring things true. I worked for a few years with deaf people, and they were the most excitable people in the whole workforce. And I have a friend who worked for several years at the Wisconsin Institute for the Deaf, and I prepared notes with this friend, and he said, yes, these are people who are definitely more emotional. And there are other etiologies for deafness. Sometimes when a person doesn't want to hear, they don't listen. And if that becomes a habit, in the next life they become deaf. In this case, we see Mercury, who rules, who is right in the first house in Pisces, is in a very strong, extremely strong opposition to the Moon, which represents emotion. So this is a mind that is very much charged by emotion, and it is a classic for that. On the other hand, Saturn is conjoined to the Sun, and this is someone who's capable of a great deal of concentration, so he doesn't have to listen to anybody else, and gets to the point that he realizes through his wife and mother that the detriment of not listening to other people, it cuts you off from a full communication, spirit to spirit. So we find in here all of this water which indicates deafness. Now, we can see from the cardinal planets that are in this horoscope, we can see that Mars is square Uranus, and we can see that there's a very quick temper. And maybe he was put into this position for having that quick temper, and that's what brought about the necessity for such a common sign destiny. Now, this is a perfect example of what we're trying to get to, because the planets in Pisces, especially the Saturn and the Sun, are both sextile to Jupiter. And this means that in his isolation, if he concentrates and he creates, because the creative part comes because Uranus is sextile to Jupiter, then he has immediate reward, both in terms of wealth and in terms of communication. So the telephone and all of the other things that he developed in order to help deaf people to be able to communicate one way or another, this shows that he's working out this hangover destiny from a past life, which probably was caused by having a bad temper and not listening to other people. The bad temper just stirred up a lot of emotions. This can be worked out vicariously by serving and giving to other people. So when he thinks and comes to positive ideas, not negative like the Sun, Saturn, everything flows forward toward Jupiter. When he comes to positive things, he's rewarded. So we can almost be certain that this is a clear working of destiny, because it's so ironic. The ironic in this case being that his thinking and compassionate understanding represented better communications. All right. Yes. No. But he suffered it from people around him that he loved the most, and he was compassionate toward them. So he did not have a direct, immediate deprivation himself, but he had an indirect deprivation, which is probably because it was indirect, made it much easier for him to find a solution. All right. Not all people, but if there is deafness, that's the signature that you find it most often associated with it. Okay. The next horoscope is not quite as clear, but it's still a very good horoscope. It is the horoscope of Peggy Lee. Everybody knows who Peggy Lee is, don't you? She's the famous jazz singer. And we're going to see a lot of, in all of the horoscopes, almost until the end of the week, we're going to see a lot of Saturn in the 12th house, which is really ripe destiny. Saturn in the 12th house, the 12th house is ripe destiny, and Saturn is ripe destiny. And when you have the combination of both, you have somebody that's really ripe. And in this horoscope, Saturn's in the 12th, and it's in a common sign, and there are four other planets in common signs. And it's quite a difficult chart, because as we said, when we're looking at attributes, we're going to find a lot of squares and oppositions. And in this case, we find a four-planet T-square. And that four-planet T-square, the widest orb is less than a degree. So this is really concentrated, really intense. And that's the kind of life she had. When she was a little girl, her mother died, and her father, a few years later, she was 4 years old. She was very little, her father died, and then when she was four, her father decided he wanted to roam. And so he left home to wander for a few years, and she was left with the classic nasty mother-in-law. The presence of the mother in the first house, the moon isn't badly aspected, but it means the presence of the mother is there. She was an evil stepmother who, if she didn't do the dishes right, or didn't do them at all, the mother would pour boiling water on her hands. And she would beat her with, you know what a razor strop is? She would beat her with the razor strop using the side with the buckle on. And she took beatings of that nature. This is a tough life. And this gives us a really interesting understanding of this horoscope, because Saturn rules beatings, and whatever part of the body Saturn is in is where you're going to take the most beatings. I have Saturn in Aries, and I'm constantly bumping my head. People who have Saturn in Aquarius are constantly bumping their shins. But when Saturn is in the first house or conjoined the ascendant, then it's general beatings all over. But in this case, Saturn is 7 degrees away from the ascendant, which doesn't really constitute a conjunction. And this is something you find very often in astrology. You find that the time of birth that is given is always a little too late, because by the time the nurse or whoever is doing the recording gets around, it's been several minutes after the birth, and unless there's somebody there with a watch that is writing it down immediately when the first breath is taken, it's going to be a few minutes later that the time gets written down. So if you take 10 minutes off of this chart, it brings Saturn conjoined to the ascendant, and that's the most likely. That's the most likely scenario. It also brings the Sun and Mercury conjoined the midheaven and in the 10th house, because she did travel a lot, but she is more famous for her lyrics. This is the person that did to jazz, which is basically African American music, what Elvis Presley did to rock and roll, which was basically American music. She took the words and put them in a fashion that white middle-class people could understand, and she became famous for doing things that way. The same is true with Elvis Presley. They were always looking for a man that wasn't a black man like Little Richard or somebody like that. They were looking for a white man that could do the same thing because they could make more money off of that. Her whole life is filled with words, and because Saturn and Mercury are in square in common signs, she gets cheated a lot. She wrote all of the lyrics for Lady and the Tramp, and she was paid $3,000 for it, and Disney made $90 million, it's estimated, and she had to go to court and fight to get the money that was due to her because of things like that. So what we're seeing here is somebody that can take an art form and that can take words and put them in another form. She could put them in a form that was agreeable to the larger part of the population of the United States. And that's a pretty good thing. That's her vicarious service. It is also, she is one of those people that was like a blues singer. By vicariously giving her sorrow, like you had plenty of money in 22, you let all the girls make a fool out of you, and now you do right and bring me some money too. Like if she's with a guy in love and he's not giving her any money. That's the song that made her famous. And people could understand it when she sang it because her sorrows became their sorrows, and that brought it across to the people in a vicarious way and improved her life like that. I guess that's saying enough about that. She did all of her fighting when she took the money. She got the money from Disney. Was done all very impersonally. And this is a quality that we said earlier that the common signs have, with that consciousness that spans cause and consequence, or that spans two different worlds. There is a quality of impersonality. Clearly, she had compassion from the Iranian side, and that compassion comes from being able to transverse the relationship between self and other. And with that, with that kind of compassion, she could understand other people. But when she didn't have vengeance, when she went against Disney, and when she had those kinds of situations, so she had that cool kind of quality that comes with rapid thinking and rapid feeling of the common signs. All right, we're staying too long here. Cool, yes, K-O-O-L. She was cool. I can't even say those words like that anymore. That's all right. That's a little bit. All right. The next horoscope is a horoscope of a very odd individual. It is the horoscope of Francisco Garcia Lorca. This is a lovely book of poems. It's in Spanish and English. It's the collected poetry of Garcia Lorca. And let's just give an example. Federico. Here's a poem from his younger days. It's called New Heart. It was written in Granada in 1918. Like a snake, my heart has shed its skin. I hold it here in my hands, full of honey and wounds. The thoughts that nested in your folds, where are they now? were the roses that perfumed both Jesus Christ and Satan. Poor wrapper that damped my fantastical star, parchment gray and mournful of what I loved once but love no more, I see fetal sciences in your mummified poems and the bones of my romantic secrets and old innocence. Shall I hang you on the wall of my emotional museum beside my dark, chill, sleeping irises of evil? Shall I spread you over the pines, suffering book of my love, so you can learn about the song the nightingale offers at the dawn? You can see this is not a muted individual. Federico Garcia Lorca was a surrealist poet and playwright and Spanish nationalist. He was very avant-garde. Pisces is on the ascendant, and he was very Pisces rising. If you see pictures of him, there are some very good pictures on the internet. He has those great big baleful eyes that looks like he's crying or has been crying or is about to cry. And he has, the ruler of the ascendant is Neptune, and it's in a strong opposition to the moon, which is an aspect I have in a mild way. This is a man that was so otherworldly or so focused with extremity into the other worlds that he could not run. It was impossible for him to run, and he even had difficulty walking because he was clumsy. And he was, it's like he was emotionally wavy. And so it's a very sad horoscope. It's a very sad horoscope. Yes. Now, Pisces is double-bodied, and it shows him to be very emotionally unstable. And even though he is a word master with the sun in Gemini, there is so much of Pisces and the moon that what happens is he exaggerates things, just as he did in the poem that we're talking about. And when you exaggerate things that much, they become distorted. And that's what surrealism is like. There is no such thing as subtle and conservative surrealism. It's so much so in this person's life, it's so exaggerated that most people think he was faking it. But he really was that way, and he couldn't really get too close to anyone because he was constantly living in surrealism. So this is somebody who tries to bridge cause and consequence, and he tries to transcendentally solve problems in art and in imagination, but he gets carried away. He gets carried away emotionally, and he gets carried away sexually. He was an open homosexual, which was a dangerous thing in the first half of the 20th century. It was a dangerous thing in very backward Spain. For a while, he was the lover of Salvador Dali. And he was obviously not received well publicly because people didn't know how to relate to his plays. They'd go and really weird things were happening, and the purpose of the weirdness was lost to the extremity of the weirdness. It was syndromic in his life. If we look at this, the Sun and Pluto shows an extreme, extreme concentration, and they're opposite to Saturn. And this shows he has a very dark self-image of himself. He is negative and black about his own being, but he tried to escape into flights of speculation. And the speculation is by Uranus in the ninth house and being sextile to Jupiter. And he tried to take emotional flights with the moon opposite Neptune. He tried in all of these things to make changes. He tried to cure himself of homosexuality. He tried to cure himself of being surrealistically extreme, and he tried switching to the opposite pole, even to becoming associated with the fascists. But he wasn't successful, and all it did is made him dither. This is the horoscope that, because of the opposition and the opposition in common signs, especially in Gemini, that whole back and forth, this is the horoscope of a ditherer. And he was always looking to the opposite pole. Eventually, he accepted his homosexuality, but didn't do anything to make a slow change to it. And when he accepted it, he went to extremes. He wrote a book of homoerotic poetry, and this is what some of his homoerotic poetry is like. His beloved sleeps on the breast of a poet. You cannot ever know how much I love you because you sleep in me, asleep to all. Weeping, I conceal you, persecuted by a voice of penetrating steel. A norm that unsettles both flesh and star transfixes my afflicted breast, and turbid words have bitten the wings of your unflinching spirit. A crowd of people leaps in the gardens, eager to glimpse your body in my agony, on glowing horses with green manes. But sleep, sleep on forever, my beloved. Hear my broken heart in the violins. Look out, for even now they lie in wait. This is extreme poetry, and it's obviously the poetry of a very tortured kind of soul. Interesting to read. The book is called Sonnets of Dark Love. His death is a mystery. Now, he was no doubt, because of the Saturn-Pluto involving the sun, he was no doubt a masochist. Even Pisces rising is the second most sign, most likely sign to masochism. Cancer. And so he was no doubt a masochist, and he is what the gays would call a bottom. And what happened is that he fought for the Nationals against Federico, or against Francisco. What was the Francisco Franco. Your memory's working well today here. But at any rate, he fell into their hands, and he had a love-hate relationship with them, even though they were the enemy, because he had this fascination with power. And this fascination with power of being the recipient of it, he had some kind of strange, in his mind, perverted inversion that by receiving the brunt of sadism to himself, he was converting the sadism. This happens in people's consciousness. And he was eventually captured, and it's theorized that the fascists, thinking that he was a revolutionary faggot, killed him, and he ended up in one of those mass graves that they had in Spain at the time.
Two questions, at least.
Yes. Oh, yours must have a different... I must have written the time in differently on yours. It's actually in the ninth. I have the time different. My horoscope must be a little bit different than yours.
Well, it's not far anymore.
Yeah, on the cusp, anyway. All right.
And then you said something about
the exaggeration of the moon in Pisces, yes. The Pisces is exaggerative, and the moon is opposite to Neptune, who is the ruler of Pisces, and that is a tendency to exaggerate. It's an emotional exaggeration. It's not so severe, and Mercury's not involved, so that the exaggeration becomes that he would be deaf or something like what we saw in the Alexander Graham Bell chart. But it is an exaggeration that if you it's like if you take a magnifying glass and you magnify something a whole lot, it becomes distorted. And this is what was happening in his emotional consciousness all the time, with the ruler of the ascendant being opposite the moon.
Okay, and the third is his name Federico or Federico?
In Spanish, Frederick is called Federico. Yeah, they do everything different there. All right.
There isn't anything in Pisces at all. It relates to...
It's just to Neptune through the ascendant, yeah. Yeah. All right, the last horoscope that we have is the horoscope of François Sagan. It is a horoscope that we looked at a few years ago when we were looking at horoscopes of Neptune, because Neptune conjoins the ascendant. François Sagan is somebody who was an instant sensation, instantly famous when she wrote a book called Bonjour Triste. Tristesse, all right. Which means a farewell to sadness. And it was a book that was about rich kids and upper middle class kids that burned themselves out on drugs and partying. And it was her own story, because Neptune is in the first house and it is opposite to Saturn. Early childhood is ruled by the first house, and so her childhood and youth. And so she was writing about what she saw and what she lived through. She herself was a middle class person that was spoiled rotten and got into the drug culture. It's her own story, because she was a very popular person, and she was popular in those circuits, and she went into drugs and stupefaction in a big way. Now, the Sun and Mercury trine the Moon, so she was able to portray clearly her emotions. Those emotions she could take and she could register them. She could record them. And that's what she did. But she didn't do it as accurately as she could have, because Jupiter squares Mercury and she would get a little sloppy and she would get a little careless about things. Jupiter squares Mercury. Venus, I'm sorry. Jupiter squares Venus. Sorry. Yeah, it's a very strong square too. It's 12 minutes from being exact. And so she didn't do as well as she could have, but she didn't care. There's a certain amount of sloppiness in the Jupiter Venus, and that's what it was. She observed the problems, but she didn't do anything to solve them. With those planets in the 10th house, all the famous French people and even famous people from other European countries, she got to know them because she was such a phenomenon and she was so successful. But she didn't use her social influence. She didn't use her writing to solve the problems. This is someone who had the capacity to transform the problems, but she got stuck in them. And the way she got stuck is one of the failings of the common signs. She wrote, I got it here in the notes somewhere. She wrote 40 novels. She wrote a memoir, she wrote plays, and she wrote a ballet. But they were all the same story. And so what it was repetition. When you get in the common signs, you can repeat things over again and again and again. Do I repeat myself? Am I saying the same thing over again? You know, that kind of thing. They'll say the same thing in different ways. And she didn't learn her lesson. And because she really didn't confront her lesson, she repeated it and repeated it until it became more ground in. The vast fortune that she had, she completely spent. And in her latter years, she was borrowing money from other people. That's a common sign thing. If you get in trouble with the common sign thing, well, it's money in common. It belongs to you and to me, so I might just as well loan it from you. And she escaped or tried to escape her problems. She got addicted to morphine, which is stronger than being addicted to heroin. And so she hid herself away from life. And there's a reason why we're looking at this horoscope last, because it makes a transition into people who don't learn things. If they fritter their lives away in common signs, they then are resulting in fixed sign destiny, which we're going to look at tomorrow. But these are some direct quotes from her late in life. She said, I have learned little from my life and from the events and from the things I have personally experienced. And she also says, I have no remorse for the things I did in life. This is somebody that could pass it off because it's only just words. It's words that you can repeat, and that, you know, you can say other words if you want, but if you don't have any more depth of character, you're probably going to say the same thing all over again. And that's what happens to her. She repeats and repeats, and she doesn't learn the lesson, and this is somebody that is no doubt going to have fixed sign destiny in the next life. I just think it's a general common sign thing that you can get into. If she had Saturn in aspect to the sun, even in negative aspect to the sun, she would have some kinds of conscientiousness. But she is in a stupor all of the time. And I have a lot of friends that have been druggies, and they all have alibis for it. And even alcoholics have that. Oh, I was only buzzed, you know, that kind of thing. That's what happens. Sloppiness, carelessness. All right, that's as much as I have to say, so let's close with the Rosicrucian student's prayer. O God, increase our love for Thee, so that we may serve Thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in Thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Any questions more? What? Yes, indecisiveness is a common sign, especially if there's an opposition that is from the common signs. I'm a man that I have three oppositions, and even though I have a lot of fixed sign things, I can't make up my mind about a lot of things. I dither quite a bit. In fact, that was one of my famous want ads that I never placed. Sinner, saint, celibate sex maniac, seeks virgin whore to dither with.
Occasional dithering. So, question.
Yeah.
If you can't make up your mind in a common sign way, when it comes, if you do in fact come around in a fixed sign the next time,
yeah. You'll
still have those same aspects though, right?
You'll be forced into a default kind of decision. There are some things that if you don't do them, they get taken care of for you. And they're very often fixed sign default conditions.
The reason I ask is with a lot of fixed sign opposition, it becomes firm in decision.
Yeah.
One last question.
Earl is not going to be here this afternoon. So there will not be now a class until 3:30, which means I get a long nap.
Are there any updated counts on people for dinner?
Not that I know of, no.
Are you coming to the dinner?
I don't know yet.
If you want to come with me, come here at
at 5 o'clock, and I'll give you... Okay. But if you want to go, come here, and you can ride with me. Good. Yes. The positive remorse is part of remorse is part of several R's. R's. The first R is recognition. When you recognize what you have done, that is the first step. The second R is remorse. Remorse is not guilt. Remorse is when you feel what you have done, and that feeling of remorse sinks in, and it neutralizes the tendency to do that again. Remorse is followed by the third R, which is repentance. When you feel what you have done, you repent from what you have done. And repentance is followed by restitution, the fourth R, that you make up and pay back for what you have done. You rectify things in the world. Because obviously when you read books about drugs in the happy, sensational way, this is going to influence people to take drugs. A lot of books that have tried to show drugs for what they are have talked about the different grades of highs and things like that, and they encourage people to continue in a way. But if she were repentant and she could, suppose she had written a different book from all of the other 40, which were the same book, if she had written a book saying, well, this is what so-and-so who was in the first novel, this is what became of them. You know, they ended up... prematurely in a home where they couldn't control themselves or something like that, or they went insane or something along those lines, that's what remorse would have done. It would have brought her to her senses so that she could do something about the errors that she made. No, guilt is something different. Guilt is remorse that someone indulges in. You can indulge in pleasure, and you can indulge in the remorse about pleasure, and in the desire nature, they're both about equal. Yeah. I hope that it wasn't too distant from your experience now, was this talk?
I told you to come. I said it's not that.